You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Hello, hello, and welcome out there in almost Merry Christmas time to you in podcast and YouTube land. You have found Johnny Has the Keys, a little thing where two guys get together. We talk about horror and science fiction, movies, television, key influences on the particular topic of the week, and then key things that that movie then in turn influenced as we go down through history sometimes. My name is David. I'm here with my good friend Tim. Tim, how are you? We are Merry Christmasing kind of thing.
We are in the midst of our crazy carpenter Christmas. And I'm not talking about Jesus, folks. I'm talking about John Carpenter.
The other carpenter. Yes. And if you're, I didn't mention it in the welcome. If you're new to us and this is your first time watching us, thank you so much. And we hope that you would continue to listen to us, look up old episodes, subscribe, give us a review, stars, all that kind of stuff. If you're returning, thanks for returning and coming back. Same litany for you guys. You know, the more you guys can even support us with a simple review, a simple star rating, anything like that, that helps us keep this going. So wanted to say that before. Tim, what have you been doing in your genre week?
Oh my gosh, my genre week. Well,
I
was a little let down with my genre week this week because I watched a movie called The Ranger.
The Ranger?
Let me tell you why I watched this movie. The poster is very striking to me. It's on Shudder, by the way. Big surprise there. Watching another Shudder movie. That poster, every time I see it, it reminds me of the actor John Barenthal. Do you know who he is?
I do not.
John Barenthal is a really good actor that played Shane on The Walking Dead, and he also played the Punisher on the Marvel series that was on Netflix.
Okay.
Well, that's not John Barenthal, even though it reminds me of him. It is actually a guy named Jeremy Holm, who is a solid TV actor. He did things like House of Cards and Mr. Robot, but he doesn't have the je ne sais quoi of Mr. Barenthal. And this movie does not have any je ne sais quoi whatsoever in it. It is directed by a woman named Jen Wexler. I don't know her. She is relatively unknown, and I don't have much confidence in the future of her directing career.
Okay, then.
Sorry about that, folks, if you're a fan. It was written by Jen and her friend, I guess, Jaco Farino, who sounds Italian. It's kind of an homage to slasher films of the 80s, but it's, you know how you can pay homage to something and it be fun and familiar, or you can just play it and it's totally cliche and stupid. She leans toward the cliche and stupid end of that spectrum.
That sucks.
I mean, there's even like punk rock kids in it that I'm like, this is so not Return of the Living Dead. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it stars Chloe Levine, who I recently saw in something else that kind of blew me away. I recognized her. She is in the Defenders series. Also, one of those Marvel series is on Netflix. She plays a daughter that's mother consults Jessica Jones. And I was like, I know that face. And then I realized it's the girl from this movie. Okay. Anyway, she is good. I like her. She's just in a bad movie. And Jeremy Holm, as I said, is good. Not a great movie. And it also stars Jeremy Pope, who I recognize because he's in a bunch of Ryan Murphy movies. Anyway, my notes say cliched 1980s slasher tropes, not enough homage, predictable, ridiculous, and not really shot well at all. So I hate to bum everybody out with my choice this week.
Wow. But,
I would pass on it if I were you guys. I'm not going to revisit it. That's for sure. So
interesting.
That was my genre week.
I had like a double genre kind of thing. It was weird because we had said
you can make up for me.
We had said A few weeks past or whatever, we had done a top five or something, and one of them was Dark City. And I remembered liking Dark City, and I put it on my list, but I had not seen it in a long time again. So I went back and revisited it, and it stayed good.
So it holds up.
And it kind of got me in a sci-fi mood. Again, it's a really dark story. It's really a unique story. It's imagine if, I think Matrix took a lot from it, sort of thing. It has a lot of that kind of feel of there's an alternate reality going on around us and you have to wake up to realize that it's happening, sort of feel to it. But I enjoyed watching and it kind of got me, I'm in a sci-fi mood now and I want to go back and either watch stuff or figure out stuff that we need to do on the show that we haven't done yet, sort of thing. So I went to, my lovely IMDb and said, let's pick, a sci-fi movie and rewatch it and see. And ironically, the one that came up that the first one I said, okay, the first one that you haven't seen in a long time or you've never seen ever, you're going to pick. And ironically, like the first 30 in the list, we have either watched recently, covered on the show, or I've seen personally recently. But okay. The first one that came up that I hadn't in a while was They Live, which is ironic because it ties into Carpenter.
Because we're doing Carpenter Christmas. Yeah, that's hilarious. I kind of wish we would have chose They Live instead of what we're covering today.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, I wish, now watching it again, I wish we picked that one because compared to today's offering, it probably would have been better.
It is sci-fi, so you can pick it in the future. We'll do that some other time.
I will. But, even with Rowdy Piper as the lead in it, it still has some good stuff to it. I liked Meg Foster in it.
I love Meg Foster. Yeah.
I liked Carpenter's pacing in it so much better than a couple of the other ones that we're doing coming up.
And he does... he pays homage to, I think it's John Ford in that movie with that fight that goes on forever. Oh, yeah. It's like A Quiet Man, the John Wayne fight that goes out through Ireland or whatever, and on for like 10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is his kind of homage to, I mean, it would work for us so much because it is his homage to so much of the past, even like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And a lot of classic sci-fi tropes are all the way through the movie. So it would be fun for us to put on the list.
I would like to revisit that one because I have not watched that movie since the 80s. It's been a minute. So,
well, in this week's effort, I had not watched since the 80s as well.
No, I didn't know you had seen it. So you have seen it.
I had seen it. Long.
It actually came out in 95. So you didn't see it in the 80s.
Well, whenever I saw it, it was back then. I repressed it. Obviously, since then.
Lordy. David is let's move on with it. It's Christmas and these folks want to celebrate.
they want to see what's in the stockings.
What David is kindly alluding to, and we will try not to beat it too hardly, is a movie that Carpenter did in 1995 called In the Mouth of Madness.
Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This cat, well. Let me do a real quick synopsis and then we'll talk about it. When horror novelist Sutter Kane, played by Jürgen Prochnow, goes missing, an insurance investigator played by Sam Neill named John Trent scrutinizes claims made by his publisher, Jackson Harglow, played by Charlton Heston. He endeavors to retrieve a yet-to-be-released manuscript and ascertains the writer's whereabouts, accompanied by Sutter Kane's editor, Linda Stiles, played by Julie Carmen, and disturbed by nightmares from reading Kane's other novels, he makes an eerie nighttime trek to the supernatural town. Do you remember the name of the town?
Sutter's Mill. No, I don't.
It's something like that. It's going to drive me crazy. I'll have to look it up. But anyway, it's in New Hampshire. It's a very Lovecraftian sounding name because this movie is a very misguided homage to H.P. Lovecraft, is I guess how I would categorize it.
Curious to see what you mean by that. So that'll be fun once we dive in there.
What I wanted to start off with is that I thought doing a John Carpenter Christmas would be fun, but I guess I should have picked three good John Carpenter movies. I mean, John Carpenter is a wonderful director. He has done some great stuff.
Yes, great stuff.
The problem is that you can count them on really one hand, and a lot of the other stuff he's done is not good. And I just think that this is one of those movies that falls into that camp I talked about on some podcast some time ago.
Yeah,
that I really want to like. Oh, Event Horizon, also starring Sam Neill.
Yep.
I really want to like this movie, but I can't because it is not good.
Well, you know that both of us love H.P. Lovecraft, love the stories. I love In the Mountain of the Mountain of Madness.
The Mountains of Madness.
The Mountains of Madness, which is a novella. Nothing like this movie, which surprised me when I first saw it. And again, this time, because I was going, then why did you come up with this title? I'm really curious, unless you're saying I want it to be Lovecraft, but then you didn't make it Lovecraft enough.
He's definitely trying to make it sound like a Lovecraft story.
Hobbs End.
Hobbs End. That's the town. Yes.
Yeah. And there's a huge key from that for later on. But anyway, but I felt the same way. I went into this. I love H.P. Lovecraft. I like John Carpenter. Sam Neill's a good actor when he's not in a bad movie like Event Horizon. So maybe, you know, it'll be good. And within like 15 or 20 minutes, I was going, oh my gosh, this is not good. This is not a good movie.
It makes me kind of mad because it's like, I know you're a good director. Are you phoning this in? What the
Obviously.
Fuck?
I got the impression that he was totally phoning this in, and or someone else just took it and re-edited it. But according to all the research I did, no, it was New Line. It was Carpenter. He kind of had carte blanche. Do your thing.
He did. He had a big budget.
It just, boy, it lost it really fast. I've got I've only got like literally, because normally I have pages and pages. I've got like 15 watch notes for this movie because I was doing most of the time shaking my head. I was just going, you know, because one of my notes is, where is it? Man, this falls apart really quickly.
Well, you heard it here, folks, first. We're usually run long on our Christmas episodes, and I have a feeling this was not going to be that long.
So we're done. No.
So many elements.
I mean, like, especially story-related dialogue in this is really weak and bad. The scares aren't there. The story's not there, really. He tries to do the story, and I'm like going, I could probably see where, like, two more rewrites, and this could have been terrifying.
It could have been decent. Yeah.
Well, no, I think if you had done more with Sutter Kane, if you'd done more and let Jürgen Prochnow do more than just have like three lines to pontificate with his typewriter.
Actually, you know what would have made this good is if it had been made now and was a 10 episode series on like Netflix where they could develop it, because it does move a little too fast for me.
Yeah, and maybe tell more of the mythos of Sutter Kane.
Right, like have an entire episode devoted to his disappearance, or have a whole episode with Charlton Heston, you know, doing his thing. You know what I'm saying? Where they could dive more into the characters so we know more why their motivations. This woman that played the editor, Julie Carmen. Yeah, people were saying how wonderful she was, and I was like, I barely remember her.
Me too. I thought she did a good job in this. And I thought Sam Neill actually acted this.
Neill is good in anything. He picks a lot of bad movies.
Yeah. It was not a good character arc for him, I loved him, his reaction when he first starts reading the novels and gets into that. You know, you can tell that he's kind of losing it a little bit without us saying that. And that was great. I liked I really did like the scene at the beginning, setting him up when he was interrogating the guy who was doing the insurance fraud. That was a great scene, but it was in a totally different movie. It was in a cop procedural kind of thing.
It was like an intro that belonged to another movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but he was so good in it about, you know, and this was curious too, because then I saw a picture of this lady, your mistress. She's wearing some of the same things that you listed were missing.
Yeah, and I'm like, are you Jessica Jones? Because I think I just saw this on Netflix. Yes, weird. A little background. It was, like I said, directed by John Carpenter, so he is to blame. It was written by Michael DeLuca, who is a big time producer. And that's where I sometimes see mistakes in these films, when the producer ends up being the writer too.
Well, I also saw that he did the music to this one with Carpenter, which is not good music.
Yeah.
It's I normally at least like Carpenter's themes.
These dudes were getting drunk at night and just making a movie. And they were.
Where was Deborah Hill? She should have been there to help him.
She may have been dead by then. She died. Yeah, she died. She was a big, big reason why he was successful.
I totally agree with that.
Michael DeLuca produced Captain Phillips. He also wrote for Freddy's Nightmares. So that kind of shows you, producer good, writer not so good.
Not so good.
He also did a short film of Stephen King's The Lawnmower Man, which I've not seen, but I can't imagine seeing, because that is such a gross story. And the original movie that came out in the 80s had nothing to do with it, the sci-fi film, but I'm talking about the original short story, which was basically about a fat naked guy that eats grass behind a lawnmower. So I'm not sure why he would make that. It is the third film in the Mouth of Madness that John Carpenter did in what he has called his apocalypse trilogy. One of which we love, one of which is brilliant, and one of which is terrible. The Thing is the one we love. Prince of Darkness is the one I have fondness for, even though it's not great. And this one, which is just not good.
Interesting. I'm looking up Deborah Hill real quick, and she didn't produce any of those for him. That's interesting.
She didn't do The Thing?
No.
Now, you know, she I don't think she did.
No, she did The Fog. She did Escape from New York. All three of the Halloweens. You know, even did Escape from L.A., the sequel, later on. But she didn't produce any of his apocalypse trilogy.
Okay, if she did Escape from L.A., then she was alive then.
Yes.
She is dead, right?
Yeah, she died in 2005.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought she had. Yeah. I thought she died young. For some reason, I had it in my head that she had a tragic death, but no, I must be wrong. Before I move on to things like cast, is there some good things you want to say about the movie? I mean, some of the effects are pretty good.
Some of the effects are good. I liked the I liked the fact that he was very smart in not showing the creatures as much. I mean, treating them very like Jaws, treating them very much like, you know, you just Alien, you just get glimpses of them. The only time you really see them is almost, and it's a key for me, but it's like Hellraiser when they're in the tunnel and he's running down the tunnel and the creatures are coming and you're seeing just glimpses of like a weird taloned hand or a weird snarly mouth or something like that. So yeah, I thought that was pretty good. Again, I liked her. I thought she had a good, up until they got to Hobbs End, I thought Julie Carmen was really good. Then when she got possessed or taken over or whatever, she wasn't good.
One of the scenes that sticks out to me is the guy behind me that has two irises and two pupils in his eye. And he's the one that while they're having lunch in the diner, you see him coming from the book signing across the street. Yeah, I love that. I thought that was really well done. Seeing, because you know something's going on in the background. It's very Alfred Hitchcock, that you know it's going on, but they don't know it's going on.
Yeah.
And you see him coming to the window to kill
them. I wish he had, one of my notes is I wish he had tapped that sort of thing for the rest of the screenplay. So instead of literally saying we are in the novel, you know, because I think she tells him that, don't you understand, we're in the novel, and he reads, you know, no, Sutter tells him that, and tells, and he makes him read, oh, you're opening the doorway, as he's opening the doorway, you know, sort of the, it would have been better rather than stating that to let us figure it out slowly, like, oh my gosh, we're actually in the novel now.
Yeah, we need
it's
the mystery
coming true. Yeah, I think that would have worked more and changed that perception a little bit more, so we slowly go mad with him kind of thing, rather than him trying to be so straight and everybody around him being crazy. And also repeating us driving back into town and almost hitting the mob five freaking times.
Yeah.
Five times I counted. And it wasn't good.
Well, he wanted us to get the impression that things are repeating. Okay. And four was not enough.
Yeah. Again, I'm just looking at my brief notes, but it's stuff like, okay, I know you're picky, David, but why does the boy leaving the bookstore reading halfway through the novel that he just bought?
He's skipping to the good parts.
Because he really is. But I did like that when, and I like that little short scene because Sam Neill's character appears and goes, Lola then asks him the question. And he goes, oh, then you'll understand this. And he picks up the axe and just goes, and then that's why he ends up in the asylum.
Right.
You know, with the book in. But, oh, I've got Greg Nicotero did the makeup. Uh-huh. That figures.
Well, the makeup's not that horrible. I mean, some of the creatures are pretty cool.
Some of the creatures aren't worked in this.
I've got a picture of one right here that looks pretty good. That zombie looking cop that's sitting next to him.
Yeah, the one he sees beating up things. That's a publicity picture because he doesn't appear in his sofa.
Remember, no, didn't he wake up from reading it and see him or something? I thought he did.
I didn't think it was a double scare. There was a double scare in it, but not that one, I don't think.
Okay.
It might have been, but I don't. I repressed it if there was.
If you want to talk about notes, you know, little nitpicky things that I want to gripe about.
Yeah.
You go back to this first shot I have of when he's in the asylum and he's drawn all the crosses and stuff in that room and all over his pajamas or whatever. And there's crosses everywhere. And the doctor says he only wanted one thing, a black crayon. I'm like, one black crayon did all of that.
That's a good crayon.
I don't think so. Yeah. You need a box of crayons to draw that many crosses everywhere.
And crayon doesn't look like that on your face. Charcoal might, but crayon doesn't look like that.
Yeah, wax doesn't really work right on your face at all.
Yeah, yeah. And again, look at that shot that you've got, because I have in my notes, this whole thing is shot like a TV movie. It's not shot like, it's lit like a television movie. It's shot like a television movie. I mean, I could easily have seen this as even a late 80s movie, not a mid 90s movie.
Well, it's because he doesn't have what's-his-face as cinematographer.
Oh, no. Dean Cundey. No.
Dean Cundey is like John. That's a match made in heaven.
They were perfect together. And I think Deborah Hill helps, too, because I think she guided John a lot in structure. And, you know, this doesn't make sense, John. We need to fill this in, you know, because she wrote a lot of some of the dialogue in Halloween. Even.
She did. Oh, my God. You know what we're doing? Here's a key for you. What? It's the Beatles. And this is George Harrison. They were a great band together, but when they split up, not as good.
Not as good.
They needed each other. Maybe it's Ringo. I don't know. It's not John or Paul, though. That's for sure.
It's not John or Paul. No.
Damn.
I loved some of the names in. I love Sutter Kane. I thought that was a great name for a horror writer. And I like whoever did his novels covers that looked cool.
Well, they looked like Stephen King paperback.
Yeah, they looked exactly. I love that whole thing. I liked when they get to the hotel, it's Pickman's Hotel. Mm-hmm. Which is Pickman's Model, which is an H.P. Lovecraft short story, which is awesome.
And Frances Bay plays that lady that works the front desk. She's great.
Kicking her husband under the desk. And she's going,
if I'm not mistaken, I probably have it in my notes. I think she's like a David Lynch actress. She's been in like everything David Lynch ever did. And she looks like someone out of Mayberry.
Totally.
I guess we could go ahead and segue into cast, because one of the people in this movie that I absolutely adore, he barely uses at all, and it's John Glover, and he plays Saperstein, the doctor in the institution.
Oh,
with the
really
crazy
weird
hair.
Yeah, really weird kind of doctor. Yes.
But he is great. I mean, he is, I don't know, if you've seen, he's in, I think he's in Angels in America. He's gay. He's been an out gay actor his whole life.
Strong
he's wonderful. He's a stage actor, and clearly he it's like John said, play it over the top. Just play it more. You know, that's great, but give me a little more.
Give me a little more.
And I was like, wow, they are really, I guess, you know, getting their money worth out of him for a couple of scenes.
Well, I mean, yeah, but okay, before you get into talent or casting, my big overall thing for cast, is, I've even had my notes, what a huge waste of talent all the way through it.
Well, Event Horizon.
Yep.
All over again.
Yep.
And that, well, we did that, what, 2 episodes ago?
I think so. So we're
it's
on
not
a,
been
we're,
long.
We're on a negative roll.
I mean, it was in October. Yeah.
Merry freaking Christmas. But yeah.
Well, I've got something before I even announce the cast that's going to throw a boomerang at you. Guess who made their feature film debut in this that you probably didn't even recognize?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Hayden Christensen.
Oh, God. No wonder I hate it. Oh, my God.
Yes. Young Darth Vader himself played the paper boy met by Trent on the road.
On the bicycle?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, see, I hated that bicycle too.
So
I
hated that kid then. This movie has a link to Star Wars. There's your key.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good Star Wars, though.
Just but joking. Yes.
There you go.
All right. Well, we have Sam Neill.
Sam Neill. Play key of Trent. Jurassic Park, who I first met as Damien in Omen 3 or whatever.
It was. It was the final conflict.
The final conflict. Yes.
It was. I love that movie. I love those Omen movies, all three of them. I would take that Omen movie over. I would take any of those Omen movies over this movie. anyway, Sam played John Trent, the lead in this movie. However, there were a lot of other folks considered for the movie. Would you like to venture a guess at any of them?
Charlie Sheen.
No, not Charlie Sheen. You got to think in the same age range.
Same age range. Martin.
One of them will blow your mind. But...
no, I don't know. I couldn't even.
Well, this one I like a lot, but he never does good stuff. And that's Tom Berenger.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Tom just never really got off the ground after he did Someone to Watch Over Me and Big Chill. James Woods, was considered for the role. Michael Keaton was considered for the role.
No.
Gabriel Byrne was considered.
Could see Gabriel Byrne. Yeah.
I could see him, but if they're going to go with someone international, I would think it would be the Jürgen Prochnow part. I don't know. Maybe not cast Jürgen and cast an American in that role.
Well, yeah, you couldn't put Jürgen and Gabriel in the same film.
No, I think it would be weird if they were opposite each other.
Yeah.
And Ray Liotta, who we recently lost.
That might have been interesting.
Yeah.
To see him a little bit more hard-boiled, a little bit more cynical. You know, Sam Neill's got that. He plays him with a lot of charm underneath, you know. He has that smile when he's saying, you guys are conning me, aren't you? Yeah, yeah, this isn't real kind of thing. Whereas Ray Liotta never has that. Ray Liotta has, I'll kill you right now. If you're conning me, I'll kill you.
No. You know. And then you've got Michael Keaton, who you can't figure out which.
Right. But he does that well.
Yeah,
he does do it well. You know, I've got to admit, once some of my better performance, you know, he's kind of, you know, and I'll just... I don't like Adam Sandler as a comedian, but I like Adam Sandler's dramas. Michael Keaton's kind of the same way. I like Michael Keaton when he plays the villain. I think he makes a good bad guy. You know,
I think he can do both, though. I think Keaton is very talented.
Yes,
he can do comedy and drama.
So, but he would have been wasted in this too, just like everybody else.
Well, I mean, obviously, you can put anybody in this movie if the same people were making it. It's not going to be good.
Well, yeah. All right. I mean, you got David Warner in this.
I know. Nothing. Speaking of the Omen.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Julie Carmen, as we mentioned, plays Linda Stiles. I have nothing else on her. So I am assuming.
I think she just quit.
That, or maybe she was having a relationship with someone involved in making the movie. I don't know. No one else was considered for the part, though.
Well, I mean, she did some other. She had done other movies in the 80s. And then I looked her up on IMDb and she's done a bunch of little television stuff.
Okay.
But nothing, you know, huge or big since then. Nothing of this.
Yeah, I don't know her from anything. And I really didn't look anything up. Jürgen Prochnow, as we mentioned, plays Sutter Kane, the missing horror novelist that makes everything, makes the plot kick into gear. But there was another foreigner. Actually, he may not be a foreigner, but his name is foreign. That was considered for that role. Do you know who it was?
No.
He's no longer with us either. It was Rutger Hauer.
Oh, yep. I could see him play both of those. Yeah, uh-huh. I could see him play that. Yeah.
I could too. Miss him. And then, of course, you mentioned David Warner plays Dr. Wren.
Yeah.
David
Wasted.
Warner.
Wasted.
Yeah, he's so good.
I know. I mean, he can even play a Klingon well.
He's in there, and what's his name? John Glover, are both wasted, and they're the doctors in the story.
Yep, both wasted. Bernie Casey wasted in this. Everybody's wasted in this.
It just all right, now Bernie Casey played Robinson, and remind me what we know him from.
I'm trying to remember. I don't have it in front of me. Okay. I'd have to look him up. But,
all right, because I recognize the name, but I don't recognize him. Peter Jason is in this movie. Now, that is somebody you would recognize the face, but not the name, because he is in like every John Carpenter movie there ever was, just about. He's in Prince of Darkness. Oh, my God. I didn't write him down. But anyway, you recognize him. He played Mr. Paul.
Okay.
And then the biggest grab for this movie is Charlton Heston is Jackson Harglow.
Yep.
How the fuck do you get Charlton Heston to do this movie?
Yeah. Yep. I don't know how they ever got him.
I'm sure he was retired at the time because, I mean, he didn't live much longer.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of anything else he was doing in the 90s. Can you?
Nope. Well, no. I mean, I always associate, you know, of course, Planet of the Apes, Earthquake.
Soylent Green.
Soylent Green.
Omega Man.
Yeah. So maybe they told him, oh, this is going to be a good science fiction story or something.
Yeah, he does like science fiction, but it's really a horror story.
It is.
Yeah.
Going back, Bernie Casey, Man Who Fell to Earth, Sharky's Machine, Never Say Never Again, Revenge of the Nerds, Spies Like Us.
Okay.
It's got a huge
reference. You had me at Sharky's Machine. Yeah. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Charlton Heston was not the first considered for the role of Harglow. Another really big actor was considered. Would you like to venture?
Michael Keaton. He's going to play an editor. No,
that would have been a good one, though.
He would have been good.
And he would have not been surprising to see in this because he'll do anything.
He'll do anything. I don't know.
James Coburn.
Okay.
Both of them died back in the 90s, didn't they?
I think so. Heston died in that. Heston died after that. He died in the 2000s.
Something. Did he? Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I could, for what it was, again, wasted, you know, I would have had him like turn evil or done something or gone crazy when he's back. But all he does is have that other scene where he goes, no, you went by yourself. I didn't send anybody with you and da, da, da.
Or Sutter Kane should have wrote him into one of his books. So he turns up at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a villain.
That's the whole thing. And kind of to your point, I'm really digging the fact that, yeah, this could have been a Netflix series, you know, where we slowly lose who's who. And are we in the book now or are we in reality or are they merging? You know, that would have been cool.
HBO or Showtime, I can't remember which, did Lovecraft Country, which is based on a really good book. It's not Carpenter at all, but
that's Jordan Peele
influence.
That's Jordan Peele. That's why it's good.
Is it?
Yeah. Lovecraft Country is Jordan Peele.
Well, I mean, I know it has predominantly African-Americans in it. I didn't know Peele did it, though.
Yep. Nope.
He did. Okay. I'm telling you, that book's great. I know the book. I've not seen the series because I don't have whatever network it's on.
Yeah.
But real quickly, finishing out the cast, I mentioned Frances Bay plays Mrs. Pickman. She's hilarious. They use her great.
Yep.
And she's creepy. She can play creepy really well.
Yes.
She can play creepy and sweet very well. And I think
doddering,
that's why
sort of old person, but she's got an axe behind her back.
Right, which is why I think David Lynch used to use her and stuff, because that's the kind of person you want, Miss
Green. Yeah.
And then I have, and I don't even remember why I put this in here, but Wilhelm von Homburg played Simon.
Don't remember either one.
So. Yeah, me either.
He's in the cast. But
And then I'll jump ahead to awards now. There are none. I've got a little bit. The Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films, our friends that do the Saturn Awards, did nominate it for Best Horror Film and Best Makeup. Did not win. And then some French thing called Cahier du Cinéma nominated it for Best Film, John Carpenter. And it came in 10th place. I guess they ranked them. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
And it. Actually, it did win something. Fantasporto, wherever that is, either Spain or Italy, maybe. Mm-hmm. It won a Critics Award for John Carpenter, and it was nominated for Best Film. But I have something. I have a news flash.
Hot off the wire.
The Cahiers du Cinéma that I just mentioned is actually a French film magazine, and they listed this film as the best film of 1995.
Oh, it's so good! It is so such a.
But I'm also showing where it ranked 10th place, so I'm not sure where I'm getting this info. IMDb, I think you're wrong. I think this is fucked up. Anyway,
list. Like French movies, or do they mean by regular all movies? It's the best.
I would say genre. It's probably in best in that genre. Surely they're not going to rank it over other movies that are in different genres. I wouldn't think. Anyway, this did not make our friend Stephen J. Snyder's list of 1,001 movies you must see before you die. Obviously, I understand why.
And I just glanced at 1995, which had 12 Monkeys, Heat, 7, Usual Suspects. I mean, so no, it was by no means the best movie.
No, not at all. 1995 had 7 and 12 Monkeys because we covered those last season.
I don't care what metric you're using there, French magazine, but this is not it. This is not good.
Yeah. And sorry for my butchered pronunciation of it, because I just realized the accent's over the E and not the A. So I have some notes, though. As far as FX, you're going to love this one. The Wall of Monsters. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. When they're finally breaking through.
It's very Hellraiser-esque, where they're going through like a tunnel. Yeah. It was several monsters being controlled individually. It wasn't. It was one massive piece. And it was a single effect that was attached to a vehicle with a wheelbase that had to be pushed with a crank. And during the filming of that scene, the wall of monsters accidentally ran over Greg Nicotero's foot, and he had to be taken to the hospital. Greg Nicotero, if you're listening to this, I have nothing against you. David's an asshole.
Yeah, that's usually true. But I think you can see the cart in one of the shots too. I think it looks really bad, and it reminded me of Hellraiser, because you can see the cart in Hellraiser.
You can. It looks like it's on a shopping cart and someone's pushing it. It's really bad. It's like a really weird flesh scorpion looking thing. Barker had a lot less money making that movie than Carpenter had making this movie.
True.
And that's for damn
very
sure.
True. Very
so,
true.
So anyway, I'll
I mean, even the credit sequence for this is slow and boring.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing with the printing press and seems to go on for like an hour and a half. It's so terrible. Really? Yeah. You had notes. Sorry. Other than Greg Nicotero's foot.
Well, I have another one that I was going to read verbatim, because this movie, and as far as keys, we mentioned that it's an homage to Lovecraft. There's a lot of Lovecraft in this, but there is also a lot of Stephen King in this, especially like we were talking about the fact that he's a very popular writer and that his paperback covers look like that. The Sutter Kane character is based on John Carpenter's friend, Stephen King, even referencing his New England roots with Hobbs Inn filling in for Castle Rock.
Yep.
Carpenter directed a version of King's film Christine, obviously. Michael DeLuca had written the screenplay for the adaptation of The Lawnmower Man. However, the characters say that Sutter Kane is even more popular than Stephen King. They literally say that in the movie.
Okay.
However, although Sutter Kane might appear to be representative of Stephen King, he is more likely to be based on Lovecraft, and Hobbs End is based on Arkham rather than Castle Rock.
Right.
Which is Arkham is the town, the fictional town that Lovecraft used to write about. The plot of the film also more closely resembles something Lovecraftian and focuses on the effect that horrific occurrences have on one's sanity. And that is a trope of Lovecraft more huge. Than King.
Big time. The old ones will drive you insane, drive you mad. You can't face
You can't look at them. They will you will go insane if you look at them. Yes. Rather than the external horrors that most King writings lean towards. Even the title In the Mouth of Madness appears to be an homage to the Lovecraft story at the Mountains of Madness. So that's a little clarification for what we were talking about earlier when I said, you know, it seems like a misguided homage to Lovecraft. It's like, this is Lovecraft if he were in, was a modern popular writer, maybe. So they kind of merged Stephen King and Lovecraft together.
Yeah.
In this movie, only Stephen King is anything but a recluse. He's always on Twitter talking about something.
But again, we lose the narrative kind of story of it. If he's wanting... Because this essentially starts in an asylum. Mm-hmm. It starts with this guy being admitted to an asylum, but he's saying he's sane, just like everybody admits to an asylum. But by the end of it, in the bookend, it's going crazy out there, isn't it? Because the whole thing is somehow the old ones, the creatures that Lovecraft was obsessed with, have broken through thanks to Sutter Kane. Whatever deal he made with the devils or the old ones or whatever have created this, we think, but we never see enough of that or get enough of that kind of breaking down of the barriers. Because the ending in this movie is horrible. The whole ending of going into the movie theater and my big key for it is scream. It is so meta that it's meta, because he is watching himself in the movie say this is reality. And he starts laughing. And it's just like, really? That was your ending? That's where you were building to this whole time.
It's like you said, it needed rewrites big time and more than one.
And more of that, you know, let Clive Barker take a stab at it and give it some of that gothic H.P. Lovecraft kind of feel. Supposedly doing research on this, Lovecraft became known for what they called cosmic horror. That was securely termed for him, sort of thing. Cthulhu, the creatures, the old ones, all of that is
very It's like when we talk about folk horror, but cosmic horror is more otherworldly. Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a subgenre, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Well, but there are lots of keys that aren't Lovecraftian. I mean,
there are
a bunch in here. I've got.
So are we segueing to keys?
Yeah.
Let's do some keys. Please?
Please. Well, again, like I said, the ending, everything else, about the last third of the movie is very Scream, very meta, referencing itself repeatedly over and over again kind of thing. So that was a very King thing to me. I mean, a very Scream thing to me. Hobbs End. Do you remember the movie that we reviewed last year that took place at Hobbs End?
Wow, I knew it sounded familiar.
Yeah. Quatermass and the Pit.
That's right. I do. Okay. I actually read that when I was doing research for this. I had forgotten.
That's right. That's where the little Martians were. They were in Hobbs.
I need to put a little thing up in the corner to guide people to that episode.
Yeah. I've got, speaking of horror people, because you said Stephen King. I had Stephen King too, you know, the New England cursed town, the horror writer, all that. But I've also got Clive Barker and like Books of Blood, because like a town that comes out of nowhere. We're driving and suddenly, boom, we're in a town that didn't exist on the map.
It's very In the Hills, the Cities.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly the reference I was thinking of. Yep.
Right. It's a Books of Blood story. I'll put that in my notes. I had not thought of that. You want to talk about Meta. The whole thing with him insane in the beginning in the asylum is very, it reminded me a lot of the Alice Cooper song Ballad of Dwight Frye.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
And if you want to get meta on that, Dwight Frye played Renfield and Fritz in the original Frankenstein and the original Dracula, and supposedly had mental problems. And I think that's what inspired Alice Cooper to write that song.
Yeah, supposedly he was schizophrenic, I think. I think that was true.
Mm-hmm. Something. Yeah. I think he might have been committed for a while, and then Alice read about it and wrote the song. And it's a classic Alice Cooper song.
Oh, yeah.
From 1971, I think. Yeah. So
yeah.
I just thought that was a blatant key to me.
You mentioned a scene to me that is a key to me. The scene where he's with his other insurance partner and they're having lunch, and across the street we see the guy come out of the bookstore and he has the axe and he slowly comes across and yada yada. It was exactly It Follows because we're seeing it happen way over there and there he's coming.
You're
and
absolutely
he's coming
right
for us.
Yeah. You know?
Reminded me so much of It Follows.
Very, very good. Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that, but that's perfect. I've got that some of the imagery in the movie is very Ken Russell-esque as well.
Yeah, and very Hieronymus Bosch kind of of graphic to it.
Which is what that background behind you looks like, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I did think he had such potential. I really liked when we have this black obsidian cathedral in the middle of this small New England town, you know, which was very Lovecraft, very King, very Clive Barker, very gothic horror, could have been cool. And he's got the whole thing with the door opening and closing. We see the little boy or whatever. And then we see Kane, or then we see the dogs. And I thought, oh, this could be real. And then nothing happened. It was just boring and didn't work.
Speaking of the church in the middle of nowhere
and
how the people of the town are fearful of it and all that, you're going to love this. I spoke in a Shutter thing or a genre thing a while back on a movie called The Devil's Reign with Ernest Borgnine. And it is basically in the middle of a Western type ghost town, and there's nothing around, but there's like a building in it as well. The whole scenario reminded me of the same movie. Although I like The Devil's Reign better. At least it had William Shatner in it, you know?
Well, I've got, we talked about, I said Hellraiser because the whole tunnel chase reminds me of that same one with the girl in Hellraiser. I've got The Thing, the effects, like when she's been possessed and he's in the hotel room and he looks down, all the tentacles are coming under the door and everything. It's very The Thing kind of puppetry sort of stuff. So it's very The Thing to me.
Practical effects.
Yeah. And I've got one you might be able to help me with. I think this is my last one. It's, I watched the series on, I think it was Hulu, but it was based on Stephen King's son's book. I'm not sure what the title was, and I should have looked it up, but I didn't. But in that book, every time you go across this wooden covered bridge, you end up in this other dimension.
It's not Stephen King. It's his son, Joe Hill.
His son.
And it's Nosferatu.
Nosferatu. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually had that one.
Okay.
It's like a covered bridge connection.
Yeah. And that's the, I fell asleep momentarily in the car and I wake up and I'm in the city and it's daylight.
Yeah. And I watched the first season of that. I haven't watched any more of it.
I haven't either. I just watched the first season. I thought it was good. It was good.
I have a few more. Some of these, I can't even remember why I wrote them down. It's like I was, what is it when they, you freehand write stuff and you're just channeling?
It's just free form sort of thing. You're just,
All right,
or it's just ghost writing, you know?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, it's like, it's like something's writing through me. Yeah. I have that Glover is actually Chilton in Silence of the Lambs, or he could have been.
They
could have played him that way.
Oh my God, so much. Yes, yeah.
You know, because he is as good, if not better, than the actor that played Chilton in The Silence of the Lambs. So why not use him that way? And they didn't. I wrote smoking is weird.
A lot of smoking.
Okay, that must be what it is. There's a lot of people smoking in this movie, and you don't see it anymore.
I've got it in my notes. I've got there's a lot of smoking in this movie, but nobody finishes a freaking cigarette. Everybody takes like two puffs and throws it away or puts it out.
Because
or
they
whatever.
Don't really smoke.
Because they, they probably don't really smoke.
Speaking from two reformed smokers. Right. Yeah. I've also got L. Ron Hubbard, the whole fiction religion thing.
Fiction religion. That makes sense. That's a good one. That's a good one, actually.
Dogs, The Omen.
Even though it's a terrible scene, not scary in the least.
No, I mean, and it's like the most memorable scene in The Omen and the least memorable scene in this.
Oh, gosh. I was like, no threatening at all. No. I mean, you could just, it's like they threw a stick. Here, come here. However, I just found in my notes. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
This is a good thing. And as soon as I say it, I think
we need them. We need them. Bring it on.
A scene that actually works, that actually, when she turns upside down.
Okay.
When she turns, you know, when she's at the car and suddenly she comes out like a crab walk and her head goes all the way around the other way. That's a great effect and really scary and moody. And it's shot with just like the headlights of the car.
Yeah, it's like The Exorcist, that scene they took out of
And that's
out
why
of
I
the
have
Exorcist.
It. My notes say Exorcist is the crab walk.
I think I may have that in here somewhere. I just haven't got to it yet.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. And then I wrote down Metallica, Enter Sandman. Why would I write that down? Did they use that song in this?
I doubt it.
I mean, it did come out around that time. It came out in the 90s.
If they did, it would be the background of the bookstore or something. I didn't remember it in my notes.
Sorry, folks. I don't know why I wrote that. Like I said, I was probably pissed off while I was taking notes for this movie.
You were going, I'd rather listen to
Metallica,
this song.
Enter Sandman, and just have no idea why the fuck I wrote it down. okay. That's what I have for my keys, but then I have some that I lifted from IMDb. This one
what?
I was going.
They have keys? They're not as good as us.
Back to the Stephen King connection.
Yeah.
Stephen King loves H.P. Lovecraft, and contrary to John Carpenter, actually writes Lovecraft-esque stories really well.
Yes.
He wrote one called Jerusalem's Lot, which I believe they've made into a TV series that I don't get. I would like to see it. It's called something else, though.
Yep.
And it's a prequel to Salem's Lot. But he also wrote a story called Crouch End that is in Nightmares and Dreamscapes. And in this story, a man and woman visit an English suburb called Crouch End, where they become stranded and are unable to leave. Mm-hmm. They are taunted, tormented, and chased by a pair of deformed, otherworldly children who later summon a Lovecraftian old god. Some aspects of Crouch End bear great resemblance to the town Hobbs End.
I would agree with that.
So Michael DeLuca was probably reading that. Or Carpenter one, and it is definitely in this film.
Yep, that works. And I looked it up. Your thing, the series you're thinking about has Adrian Brody, and it's called Chapel Wait.
Yes,
and it's actually on Epics, and I don't know
whatever that is. Yeah, but one day maybe I'll see it.
Yes, but it's essentially the creation of Jerusalem's Lot, like the original landing of the ship and the when it's a small town.
It's like a colony before the town was built.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. Yep. And there's something underneath it that's not right. And they touch upon it in Castle Rock.
Yeah.
The second season, but they never made another season. So I'm not sure if they're going to go anywhere else with it.
True.
I just came across my Quartermass in the Pit notes. So I did have one I had just forgotten about. It's the subway station where the alien ship is excavated.
Correct.
Hobbs End.
It's a suburb.
Do you know what Hob means?
Devil.
Yes. I'm very proud of you. Coming from a reformed Satanist. Yes, it is an old word, which is used to refer to the devil. Yep. Do you remember what movie Sam Neill's watching at the end? And it was one of John Carpenter's favorite movies as a kid.
When he's in the movie theater? Mm-hmm. I thought he was watching himself.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
You mean when he's watching television?
Yes.
In the part with the before he starts reading the books.
I think so. I think that
I don't remember what it was.
It was Robot Monster.
Oh yeah, because it's the
it's a gorilla with a space.
It's a gorilla with a round helmet, bubble helmet. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then lastly, I have the rubber ball that bounces against Styles' legs during the second encounter with the children has a pattern reminiscent of the beach ball alien from Dark Star. That has to be intentional.
That there would only be.
Well, I mean, John Carpenter directed both movies, so I don't think that's intentional.
Yep.
And that's all she wrote, I think, as far as my notes.
I mean, it's just a wasted opportunity. This movie could have led to even Sutter Kane novels, you know, for that matter. Mm-hmm. It could have done something. But
Seems like back when they used to make novelizations of movies and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they used to make novels from the X-Files and Star Trek and all kinds of. They could have spun this off into something really cool.
It really just seemed like he was phoning it in. It really did. And that's unfortunate because, you know, like we said, John Carpenter has done some phenomenal
stuff. Yeah.
You know, I mean, he will always be known to us for The Thing, of course, but also Halloween and so much more.
Yeah. I mean, I would even include The Fog, Maybe They Live, and Prince of Darkness. But like, there are so many movies. I could spout three right now. Vampires, Ghost of Mars, and you know what I'm saying? I would not even watch them a second time.
No.
He did one called The Ward that I've never even seen. It got such bad reviews. Have you seen it?
The Ward?
No. The Ward, W-A-R-D.
No, haven't seen it. No.
Maybe I should check it out. But you know, it's going to piss me off if I do. I know. It's like, and Escape from L.A. is another one. He just totally went off the mark. And he even had Kurt Russell back for that.
Yeah, but like Body Bags. I mean, that was terrible.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that was the television one.
It's the one he did with Toby Hooper. It's like an anthology.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm not a big fan of Christine. I don't think he did a good job with Christine. I think
that I would put it in the former before I would the latter. I mean, that's one I would revisit for the podcast just because it's him and Stephen King. I mean, it's not as good as the book, but it's not a great book.
Right.
So
that was King's low period too, was
right
in that era. Yeah. Firestarter, Christine, Cujo, all those
cocaine years.
Yeah, the cocaine years. Yeah. So that's
Merry Christmas, folks. We're sorry.
You know, sometimes in your stocking, you get a lump of coal. But hopefully, with listening to us, you know some of the parallels and some of the key influences that came that kind of set this movie up, that obviously influenced it, and then hopefully that it's not influenced going forward, though. We appreciate all of you listening to us week after week, and or if you're new, we appreciate you listening to us this time and hope you'll be back. If you would take the time again down there to subscribe, ring the bell, give us a review, let us know, especially if you can go to iTunes and give us a review. Wow, it really helps us find other people who are like-minded and crazy like us to do this. Tim, until next week, are we staying in Carpenter Christmas next week?
We're staying in Carpenter Christmas, but I promise you it is a better movie.
Okay. Can't wait then.
Honestly, nostalgically speaking, it's a favorite of mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew, but as soon as I saw the title, I went, ooh, I can't wait to watch that one. So, yeah. There we go. All of you out there listening, thank you. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
All righty. Bye.
Bye.